You've entered Bookstorm with Kristen Civiletto and me, Chris Storm. This is a podcast devoted to best-selling books that matter, books that make a difference. We're diving down deep with beloved authors about their stories. We're exposing hot-button topics and heartfelt themes, the issues that affect each of us in our own lives, as siblings, parents, partners, friends, as human beings. We're braving new ideas, fresh thoughts, hard lessons, and important truths. Those kinds of things that stay with us long after we turn the last page and close the book. Welcome back, listeners. We're so excited. We have the author you've been asking for and waiting for. Charmaine Wilkerson is with us today. We're speaking to her from her writing home in Italy. We're so happy to have her. Let me tell you a little bit about her. She's from New York. She's lived in Jamaica. As I said, does most of her writing in Italy. And she is the author of the debut novel, Black Cake, that hit the New York Times bestseller list and has stayed there. She is a former U.S. news and communication professional whose award-winning short fiction has appeared in various anthologies and magazines. Charmaine is represented by the prestigious Madeline Milburn Agency. And I want to tell you a little more about this book. Louise Hare, the author of The Lovely City, calls Black Cake a stunning page-turner. Kristen and I could not agree more. Not only is this book a New York Times bestseller, it is a Read with Jenna book club pick and a UK Indie Book of the Month pick. It also was one of the most anticipated debut novels of 2022. I'm only going to name a few who proclaimed this. The New York Times, The Washington Post, Cosmopolitan Magazine, Glamour, Good Housekeeping, Marie Claire, People, Parade, W Magazine, InStyle, and I could go on and on. Phenomenal. Currently, it's in development as a Hulu original series by Oprah Winfrey's Harpo Films. I bet you must be so excited about all of this. Welcome, Charmaine. Thrilled to have you here with us today.
Thank you so much, Chris and Kristen. It's wonderful to be here. It's really exciting. And I love so many of the books that you talk about and think about reading the ones that you suggest.
Wonderful. That's exactly what we're hoping from all of our listeners. And so Kristen's going to give a little synopsis.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, we don't give away any spoilers, Charmaine, so I wanted to just kind of talk a little bit about what the book is about, and you are free to add anything if I leave it out, but I'm being very careful because your story unwinds in such a beautiful way, and I don't want to take that away from the reader. So very briefly, in the story, Eleanor Bennett's death leaves behind a puzzling inheritance for her two children, Byron and Benny. And it's a traditional Caribbean black cake that has been made from a family history with a long history. Now, in the story, Eleanor has a recording that she leaves for her children after her death. And she tells them this incredible and very complex story about a young woman who basically flees from her homeland under suspicion of murder. She's a strong swimmer. And there's a story that we don't know exactly what happens, but she goes into the water. Now, back to the modern day, we have these two siblings who are estranged from one another. Both of them are not sure exactly what has happened. They both maybe yearn for a reconciliation, but neither one makes the first move. And both siblings, which I thought was very interesting in this book on many levels, are experiencing some disappointment in terms of, have they disappointed their parents? What are their parents' expectations for their lives? Now, as the story unfolds, and as Eleanor's story unfolds, it really challenges everything that the siblings thought they knew about their mother and their own history and background. If you want to add anything, you're welcome to, but I don't want to give anything away.
Well, I think that's a wonderful starting point where you've begun, Kristen. That's the thing, as you say, it's a multi-layered story, and we can talk more about that as we go on. It's a bit like a cake, isn't it? Because what you've described is mostly the first and the second layer there, and then there's a lot of other stuff. And some of it, as you say, we can't really discuss in great detail because it would be full of spoilers.
And there's so many great unfoldings throughout this story. I just want to tease our listeners a little bit that you're going to be surprised and pleased, and it's just a wonderful, wonderful novel. So we're going to go a little more into the themes of the book. And what I just loved about this story, as Kristen just said, it's interwoven life experiences of grandparents and children and siblings. And it proves to the reader that we are connected in so many ways. Even within small objects, I found this so interesting. Of course, the title of the book, Black Cake, that was made throughout the history of this family as something special, but showing their heritage. But at one point in the book, Benny's mother gave her a little plastic cup. And I'm going to quote, she said, "Take this. That way you'll have a little piece of home with you wherever you go." It was a measuring cup. A cloudy little piece of plastic, but it ended up being so important to her, true treasure. At one point, she even thought to herself, could there still be a little bit of Ma's DNA on this cup? And as a reader, I think we can all relate to this. Little treasures from our childhood or something from our grandparents' or parents' home that maybe elicits a memory, but maybe doesn't even. Maybe it's something from their life. I was going to ask you as a writer, please tell us how you came up with this notion of these important objects. Is this something that's been important in your own life?
Well, I should state right from the start that although this story does involve a family with people from the Caribbean and the US and the UK, and that's a similarity on paper. With my own family, this is not at all autobiographical, but you did hit on something, Chris, that I think does, I can certainly relate to it in my life and many other people. And that is the idea of, and one of the ideas that drives this story is the how each one of us chooses to hold something close to our heart and how objects, memories, stories help to transfer information about who we are, our identities, our sense of family, our sense of home, and how that might shift over time. So this goes back to your question. When a few years before I started writing this book, and quite some time before a black cake ended up in the book, because it wasn't there at first, a younger member of my own family wrote to me to ask for my mother's rum cake recipe. She called it a plum cake. I call it rum cake. A lot of people from the Caribbean call it black cake. So the point is, when he wrote to me, I thought, ah, well, that's a surprise. I didn't think he'd care. And it was very important to him, in fact. And I just jotted down a couple of notes about the assumption that I had made, the assumption that I had made about what was important to someone else. And it was a pleasure to know that that thing, just a cake, would be so important to him. And you mentioned the measuring cup. That's something from the imagination, meaning there may not be a measuring cup of any such importance in my particular family, and in your family, it might be something else. But in a world in which we are so often taught to measure things by their monetary value and even their official historical value, centuries, very often the things that mean something to us that help us to form our sense of identity are the little things because they have been touched and used and loved by other people who meant something to us because they have been passed down to us along with everyday memories and recipes and stories and because they remind us of someone who may be gone. And so that kind of really takes me back to your question. The cake gave me an idea, but it's just an example of those everyday things that take on a meaning of their own. And it's all about emotion, love, and the stories, you know, the stories that come with objects.
And what you said was also profound. It can also link to your identity, because we are a little piece of those people who've come before us. And sometimes this is in good ways and sometimes not good ways. You know, we have happy memories, but sad memories. I have all kinds of little things that I've collected that are worth nothing monetarily, but to me, everything. And I just treasure these little things. I think you showed the reader that this is such a valuable connection. Do you have anything that you've saved from your grandparents or your great-grandparents of that nature?
Well, I never did know my grandparents. Oh. And so, yes, and so this is interesting to me. I do come from a family that is very multicultural. I myself have lived in a dozen places in three countries. My own parents were born in other countries and ended up in the US. My own generation, we were all born in different places. Each of us has a slightly different sense of identity. Each of us calls a home home in a different way. And most of us don't even look alike. And so the things, again, that are important to us really often are linked to the love. You know, now I may not have known my grandparents. I don't think I have anything from my grandparents, but I do have things from my parents. My parents remarried at very young ages, and I have things from my step-parents, which means something to me. I have things from my sister or something my sister's made that I carry everywhere I go. You know, so we're not going far back in time, because not every family has a long history, but we can go far and wide in terms of stories and love.
Yeah, it's beautiful. In my family, it's my nanny's pizza pans and her rolling pin. And I know my mom has always treasured that, she and her sisters. So, and of course, it reflects our Italian heritage, but also we remember her with a lot of love, preparing those things for all of us. And she spoke love to us in the way that she cared for the family and cooked for us. It was very important to her. So I love that idea of identity.
And it's interesting. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
No, you talk.
No, it's just interesting, Kristen, that you did mention the rolling pin and the pizza pan, because exactly, I have a blue French-made ceramic pie plate that belonged to one of my mothers. I always say I had two mothers. And that means a lot to me. And every time I make something, you know, it's very special. And I say, don't drop it. Give that to me. I'll carry it. You know, it's important. I'm sure it could be replaced. But what matters is that, what really matters is that that pie plate was used by my mother in another kitchen. And I have brought it all the way to Italy. Now, you may have noticed a little sound while I was speaking. Did you hear that
yes,
sound?
Yes, a little yeah. bit.
I'm so sorry about
oh,
that.
Oh, no
Is
worries.
That
That's
a problem?
Fine. Oh, no, not at all. Not at all.
We often have pets who wander in and out of our guests.
Oh, kids, pets, all kinds of things. We're fine.
Well, Charmaine, I wanted to ask you a little bit about another theme that jumped out at me. In the story, one of the characters lied to her husband about something for all of their marriage. And there was a quote from her I thought was very interesting. If you wanted somebody to keep loving you, you couldn't ask them to bear all of your burdens, couldn't risk letting them see all of who you were. No one really wanted to know another person that well. And that struck me, because the thing that she kept from him really consumed her, and in some way shaped who she was. And I was wondering if you thought that that character would change her choice if she could. Would she maybe do things differently and allow herself to be known throughout that marriage? What do you think about that?
Well, this is what's fascinating about characters and fiction and the ways in which we explore things. I think we'd like to think, oh, we might have done it differently. But I really don't know, because that character lived in another generation. She grew up in a different way, and she faced challenges that perhaps for you or me would still be important, but would not seem as awful, because there are cultural differences, there are generational differences. I think that she kept making that decision repeatedly over the course of her life. And finally, when the time came, she changed her mind. And we won't say any more about that. But I don't know. And I think that's what fiction does. And I think this is how fiction can help us in our own lives. We might think, well, what would I do? Or we might think, well, why did that person in my life make that kind of decision? And I think sometimes fiction teaches us empathy, even if it's frustrating, and even if we wish the character might do differently, would she have done differently? She kind of tells us in her story what it would have taken for her to change her mind. And it didn't happen all those years.
And it's very interesting, because I was thinking to myself that this character made a choice for her husband, thinking it was in his best interest. And how often do we do that in our lives and in relationships, where we make choices based on what we think is best for someone else? And in this situation, I was wondering if there's a little bit of a fear of rejection if you are truly known for who you are, or is there freedom in allowing people to know exactly who you are? I don't know. That's something we might all wrestle with.
I think we do. And even though the things that may cause us worry, as mentioned, do shift from one culture to another, from one gender to another, from one generation to another, the bottom line is, no, I think that this was also about her fear of rejection, because our identities also are built on, we can talk about color or origin or family or profession, but our identities are so deeply rooted in the people who love us, the people about whom we care. And I think for that character, that was part of it too, you know? And I think women in particular, people who identify as women in particular, are particularly vulnerable to a sense of shame or fear of rejection. I think we see that. I don't think it's exclusive to women, but there was a lot of that for this character.
Oh, absolutely. Very interesting.
Very much so. And I love this whole theme of identity throughout the book, that we're basing our identity on not only the past, but relationships, objects that are passed down, secrets. This is why we love fiction so much. As you just said, Charmaine, I'm a very big believer that, excuse me, there is no such thing as pure fiction. It's all built on what we already believe to be true in our own lives. So I always tell listeners who say, well, I only read nonfiction. I say, well, you should read fiction, because there's more truth in there than you could imagine. Like this beautiful book, just adored it. So I loved this quote from the book, where it said, everything is connected to everything else. And if you go back far enough, you will see this connection. And they were referring to the land, even pushed into existence by violent processes, glaciers, oceans, volcanoes, that everything is connected to everything, including people, that we are more the same than different. I loved this notion, because even though the children, without giving away too much, did not have a close relationship to the parent, one may not have known the parent, they still had a connection that came out in their gifts, their talents, some as nurture and some as nature, who we end up to be. But I was wondering, it's very odd to me that sometimes we celebrate the differences in each other, but sometimes in today's culture, we're fearful of differences in each other. People who think differently or act differently or have different careers, or we can do so much, and this leads into prejudice. And I wonder, what were you trying to show the reader about humanity with these differences, and maybe even this illogical injustice of prejudice. I saw a little of this, a fear of it, with exposing truths about these characters.
So it's interesting the way in which you put that question, talking about what are you trying to show? So often we as readers, because I'm a reader first, we say, what are they trying to say? What I find is that in writing a story that is invented, you know, for the most part, but which does filter and process emotional truths. They may not be my emotional truths. They might be someone else's, but they're there. What I find interesting is that as a writer, I don't set out trying to show something. I set out asking, exploring, wondering, you know, wringing my hands over stuff. And that is one of the wonderful things about writing. You kind of explore and you don't always have the answers. But what I do think is evident in this particular story is that you have a number of different characters living in different times with different identities. But one of the things that many of them have in common is this idea that they may feel quite comfortable with who they are. They may feel pretty good about themselves, but they are constantly struggling against the expectations of others. Yeah. So you use the term prejudices. It's not always prejudice. Sometimes it's aspiration. In the case of the younger generation, Byron and Benny and their parents. But the bottom line is you have characters who are always running up against the expectations, the stereotypes of others. Others who are saying, ah, so that's how you identify. Well, this is what you should look like, live like to do, love, etc. So we have people who have images of us, and then they sort of try to fit us into little boxes. And I think that's a universal thing. No matter where you live, no matter what your generation, no matter what you look like, there's always a sense of who you are. And then someone else saying, ah, well, in that case, this person says they're this, or they look like that. This is what we expect of them. And that's part of life. That's part of how we live in the world. And part of what we have to navigate when we form relationships and we live in communities.
Mm-hmm. And especially in the book, I found this, this is a real life issue with parenting. We have hopes and dreams for our children, but they are their own individual. And the characters in your story, in both generations, did not want to be what the parent wanted them to be. They were something totally different. I think, without giving spoilers, the older generations would not have tolerated this person's independence, the child's independence. But in your second story, the more modern generation, I believe they would have tolerated it more. So as you said, there's a fear factor of just being who you want to be and letting the chips fall. This is who I am, and I'm going to be brave and courageous, and this is who I am. This left the reader with such a strong lesson, maybe even a life lesson, as a parent for me, to just allow the next generation to discover who they are without having to be who we expect or demand that they should be, and to treasure the difference in them that could be so different from us. It was a little lesson I felt that maybe you did not intend to give, but it was a beautiful takeaway. Thank you for that.
Well, I think one of the things that touches on, though, when you mentioned fear, is isn't it the most natural thing in the world for a parent to just be terrified? They just want everything to work well for their children. So that also, I think, is explored in the book, that it's a natural reaction, and perhaps parents make mistakes sometimes, or they misjudge the situation, but they're often really coming at it from a desire to see things go more easily for their children than for themselves.
Absolutely. I'd like to pick up on that theme, Charmaine, because parents often try to shield their children from the trauma that the parent may have experienced. And I was wondering if in this day and age, is that possibly a mistake? right? Because that's something that perhaps we could help our children see, that you can survive these things, that there's hope. But I think back a generation or two ago, a lot of things were kept hidden. They were very shameful. And I was wondering what some of your thoughts are about that in this generation.
Well, I think looking at the book, Black Cake and the characters, one of the things we do see is that in the youngest generation represented, some of the large misunderstandings between family members come from children not fully understanding what happened the generation before, not even being able to imagine because they had so little information. I'll say one personal thing. I'm a big believer in privacy. People have the right to keep things to themselves sometimes. But in terms of that particular family, the fear of sharing sort of set up an image with which the children were living. And when they grew up and began to hear the truth, it felt like a betrayal. It felt like a betrayal because they couldn't even conceive of who they were now in the new situation. And perhaps parents sharing a bit more could have made it easier on them. But we also know, because you've read the book, that there are reasons why certain things were concealed. And so they're not all equal. Some secrets are less equal than others.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, think about often we fill in the blanks about things we don't know, and we ascribe motivations to people that may not be accurate. And I loved that in your story, because the characters likely would have shared more with their parents had they understood where their parents came from and some of the things that they had dealt with. And again, I think that's another good takeaway as a parent, because, you know, I deal with this too. I've got four children, and I always think in terms of how much should I share with them about things that I have struggled with. And in this day and age, I think it's probably good to err on the side of more disclosure, because it's more open in terms of conversations that we have. But in these, you know, multi-generational stories, we could see where there were good reasons to keep things very quiet. So what a fascinating aspect of your book.
Well, yes, and you touch on the idea, and I think Chris mentioned this too, the idea of openness, because we are living in a world where, and I've even had a friend of mine say this to me the other day, the issue of, you do want things to be age appropriate. And you sort of muddle through and make the decision as you go along. The thing is, social media, no matter what they say, is not age appropriate, right? So when you have a new generation that's tech savvy and they're linked into everything, and also kids know more than before, and you also have traditional media being more open about many subjects, your kids might have heard it before. But again, you know, how much do they understand, and how do you help them to understand if they're very young? I think it's just a constant juggle. It's a constant process of exploration and discovery, a lot of heart and some common sense. And I think it's always going to be something that has to be addressed as one goes forward in time.
Yeah. I love that.
So for our listeners, you are going to love this book by Charmaine Wilkerson, The Black Cake. Anyone who's part of a family, any kind of family, any size, shape, anything, we all deal with relationships. And she has woven such a beautiful story that really makes you look back introspectively to your own life and say, what can I do different, or why am I this way, and how can I affect the next generation? It's a very important story. Thank you for writing this book. And can you give us any glimpse of what you're working on now?
I can only say that I'm writing. Okay. I can't say anything more, but also, you know, I do a lot of reading, and that is one of the joys of being a new author. Because I've worked in other fields, but this is my debut novel. And that is just reading other people's work, sometimes before it's published, to cheer on other authors. You know, reading is a joy. Stories help us to explore the world. They help us to process things. Mm-hmm. And so it's a privilege to write one, but always a privilege to read the stories of other people.
Isn't that so true? Well, thank you so much for joining us today. And I want to just tell our listeners, you're going to want to connect with this fabulous author, and you can find her on social media and even on her webpage. Thank you so much for joining us today, Charmaine. It was a pleasure talking to you.
Thank you.
Thanks to you. And thanks for reading Black Cake so carefully. It's been wonderful talking to you, Chris and Kristen.
We love the book. Highly recommend it to everyone. Keep writing and bring us something else soon, someday.
Thank you. I will. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, so many wonderful things with this book and the author. What was your great takeaway? I have so many things going through my head right now. I can't even explain it. But I loved this. I just love this notion of my first question to her about these things that our parents leave behind, especially the things that are not expensive. Like you said, that little dish. And I wanted to get more into this with her, this idea of cooking, because the black cake was a cake. So it's not just something that you hold, like you said, the rolling pin. You hold it, but it's making something that you're eating and you're enjoying and you're tasting it. You're smelling it. So it's like all your senses are encompassed in this one little thing that your grandmother or your great grandmother may have touched. It's so important. Yeah. And I don't know, you couldn't explain it to someone unless you held it in your hands and said it. This generation of those gone, because we can talk to them. We don't hear a lot back, but it's like also the connection of love. I always say love lasts forever. My nieces and nephews get so tired of me saying this all the time, but love lasts forever. And these little things that are left behind, we can just hold on to.
Yeah.
I love that you said that about that rolling pin.
Well, I come from an Italian family, and my fondest memories are my aunts and my grandma and my nanny, my mom, everybody cooking in the kitchen. I mean, that is what they did. And they didn't just feed us food. It was, here's love. Here's how I care for you. And, you know, yesterday I was at a family wake and we were kind of reliving many of these things. And I sent my daughter back in at one point and she came back out and she had food. I said, where did you come up with food? You were at a wake in a funeral parlor. Somehow my mother sent her out the door with food. So, you know, these things are important. Also, this book really did challenge me to think about these things on many levels. For example, I inherited a lot of books from my father. That's what I have of him. I have a baseball hat and books. And it wasn't just the books themselves. It was his interests, all World War II books. I was able to get to know my father through what he's reading, his little notes. And in Black Cake, we see very similar things. It's not just the object, obviously. It is what that person was communicating, and how do you get to know your parents better? Mm-hmm. And in this situation, you know, Benny and Byron really didn't know their mother on some level, but they were getting to know her through some of these objects and through some of these recipes, for example.
You know, it's funny, I have a quote down here that I just added a few extra quotes that I wanted to speak with her, but we got a lot of questions in. And in the book, it says, the thing about identity, there's your family history, there's how you see yourself, and then there's what others see in you. So this is interesting. So this notion of you having saved all these things, it becomes a part of who you are, but then you as the next generation take on something new and different. It's almost like you add to that cake.
Yeah.
Every generation, and I'm sure that's what the symbolism was meant to be. I also loved this quote, tradition is only about what people have done, not about what people are capable of doing. So you brought up some good points that should parents keep some secrets or should they share some secrets? And this quote from the book sort of says, tradition is what we have done, whether you tell it or don't tell it, the next generation should not feel bound by it. They should be able to say, yes, okay, I see that you've done that. Maybe it even gives them a freedom to not be perfect, to see something that, but then also that new generation needs to say, that's great, but I'm capable of something different, maybe better, maybe more. I am not stuck in that older generation. Thank you for sharing it all. Now I'm going to take our family history and legacy and do something incredible or something out of the ordinary. Yeah. And that's the legacy I think that we leave to our children. I like the idea of sharing everything. I don't know where I am on this. I like the idea of sharing everything, but I'm looking at my grandparents and I know that they didn't share everything with me because it was a different generation.
Yeah, very little. I know nothing of their struggles, but they must have had them because I can look at the objective facts and think, wow, that was really significant. But, you know, I err on the side of being truthful and being open with your children because it shows them you can survive things. Here I am still standing. Here I am still functioning. And here are some of the very difficult things that I have experienced that you may not know some of this background. And I had a son. I have three sons. One of them asked me the other day, have you ever done anything that you were ashamed of in your childhood? And I was like, oh, yes. And I told him about a situation when I had told this terrible lie. And it has like haunted me for years. It was awful. And he said to me, you already shared that story with me. And I was glad in my mind that I had already shared and told them some of my most shameful things because, it shows them you survive, you go on, you can heal.
It's a great lesson. We've all done stupid things. I would love to meet the person who said they never did or said anything dumb, especially in their teen years or as kids. Yes. You're still learning and growing. And yeah, you're showing him, hey, because he's going to make mistakes. And then he's going to say, okay, but mom made a mistake. And look, that didn't hold her back. She became a lawyer. She's doing incredible things. And that's the beauty of life. And I think that's a gift that you're giving to him by saying, yeah, listen, your mom's not perfect. You're looking at me. You may think I'm perfect, or maybe you may not think I'm perfect, but you can move on and do wonderful things.
Yeah. Well, what's on your radar, Chris?
What's on my radar? I loved what Charmaine said about the reading of all these books. And as everyone knows, we're huge readers and we've said it a million times. Fiction is not all pretend. If you're watching our podcast, you know that we dive deep into life-changing real issues. And I think that's why we love fiction so much. So I'm going to copy Charmaine and I'm going to get out there and just read a lot more and discover and learn and grow. And even at my age, there's still time for improvement and growth. And that's what I love about fiction. How about you?
You know, one of the things on my radar, especially after this book, is the relationship between siblings. And I have a wonderful brother and sister, and just thinking about being intentional about those relationships and treasuring them, because, you know, the reality is at some point it may just be you and your siblings. You may not have your parents on this earth. And I want to make sure that I am treasuring those relationships. And in this story, it was interesting because these siblings both had such a different idea of the problem that existed between them. And had they communicated, they probably would have been able to resolve that. And I want to make sure that never gets in the way with my siblings.
That's a great point. And I want to say, we all of our imperfect siblings and ourselves. So we're coming at a relationship. And I always think this too. When we look at a problem or a situation, you have to remember everyone within this circle of problem is looking at it from their own center of their own universe. We are the center of our universe. We see everything according to what you said to me, what you did to me, how I felt about it. Very few times do we say, I'm going to step out of myself. I'm going to step into my sibling. Yeah. How do they feel? But what did I say to them in response? How has their life been growing up? We very seldom do that. But that's what you just said that I loved. When you make a conscious effort to open that communication, as difficult as it sometimes is, tell me how you feel. What did I say? What did I do? I'm sorry, I never meant that. Or maybe I did. You made me angry, so I said this. It's such a, relationships are very complex, multi-layered. And that's a wonderful takeaway. I love it. Our readers can go with that one too. So thank you for joining Kristen and me today on Bookstorm Podcast. We're super excited that we're in 17 countries, 175 cities, and almost 50 states, including Hawaii. Want to give a little shout out to our incredibly talented sound engineer, the Mr. Mark Carey. Mark, come and say hi. I've got to give him a little spotlight because I don't know where we'd be without producer and sound engineer. He keeps us in line and makes us sound good, sometimes even makes us look good. Thank you, Mark.
Hope you all enjoyed the show.
I know they did. So stay on the radar with Kristen and I. We are having some fabulous authors scheduled for our full spring lineup. We have Ellen Marie Wiseman with The Lost Girls of Willowbrook, Teresa Ann Fowler, and It All Comes Down to This, Francine Rivers and The Lady's Mine, Sarah McCoy and Mustique Island, and Kate White, The Second Husband.
Until next time, listeners, one of the best ways to brave the storm is to dive down deep into life-changing fiction.